I gotta know. It's been so long. I gotta know, like, the most Rust things that I missed so far. Like, I feel like I'm, like, several episodes behind on the Rust and the Restless.
Did you, like, did you accidentally choke to death on, like, an egg sandwich? Or, like, give us some of the classics. Did you buy too much shredded wheat?
So, a few...
Did you get a big 4-scoop ice cream and lick it and it all fill in the gutter?
A few weeks ago, I did, as I was, like, setting the table, a dinner fork fell off the plate and, like, landed tines down on my foot.
Oh.
And broke the skin.
Oh,
shoot.
Is it your horrid foot that you've been sending me pictures of against my will?
Same foot.
Wow, that's a foot's really been through it.
I'm not getting any Russ foot pics.
Russ sent me, this was a brutal one. Russ, this is like a few days after his son, or a couple weeks after his son was born. Russ told me, like, oh man, he's growing up so big. I can't believe how much he's changed just in a few weeks. And I was like, oh, send me a pic. And fucking sent me a pic of his toe and how it has evolved and gotten worse in the weeks since the last time he sent me a picture of his toe, which I did walk right into it. Yeah. I walked right in.
Sure. Lovely. I do want to mention, though, I am a little bit, I wouldn't say disappointed, but I do want to say, like, this is my first time getting a baby at launch. And I mean, the first impression for me has been, like, very good and I've enjoyed it, but it is kind of shocking that, like, I think in this day and age, to have a baby that's, like, at launch doesn't have, like, crawling, for example, seems
crazy. Yeah, it's BS.
Like, I mean, no solid foods at launch. Like, how do you consider yourself competitive in the marketplace at this point, baby?
And and a lot of the challenges of those first 3 months of the baby are attributed to they're not done yet. And that's why they call it the fourth trimester, mm-hmm. because their stomach's not done being built up. And it's like, well, then keep them in there. Mm.
Yeah, the fourth trimester is a layperson term. It's actually called the Bethesda trimester.
Right.
And the problem is, one of the big ones is the exploits that you can do with kids this age. I heard that if you whisper the right words into Russ's son's ear, you see Keanu Reeves naked. And it's like, could we not?
I do want to mention, though, the one upside is he is free to play, which has been great. There really is no upfront cost at all. And I'm sure that'll just be consistent throughout. Like, it's a pretty low lift in terms of expenses.
Also, people think it's controversial not to include, you know, the name in the credits with your children, but I do actually support Russ tattooing his name onto the forehead of his child.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean,
how is Justin Jr. doing, by the way? I mean,
we went with ES, actually.
Sorry, what?
ES.
ES. Yeah.
Egg sandwich!
My name is Justin McElroy, and I know the best game of the week.
My name is Griffin McElroy, and I know the best motion control Zelda game from 2011.
My name is Christopher Thomas Plant, and I know a Zelda game that is on the Nintendo Switch.
My name is Russ Freshing, and I know the best game of the week.
Welcome back.
Is the baby sleeping? Is the baby sleeping?
Is the baby asleep right now, Russ?
Is that why we got a reduced volume?
He is pretty milked up at the moment, so he's not doing
that. All right. Oh boy, it's a new era, isn't it? The era of four dads.
Four dad era. So this is the besties where we talk about the latest and greatest in home, interactive, intergamement. Oh yeah, folks, we still have time to game. Don't get it twisted. These dads still love to game. And this week we're talking about, it's a book club, by the way. It goes, it's a video game. Russ, where you were going, we went back to, it's a book club for video games of video game club. Is that?
It's a book club for video games, colon, a video game club.
Yeah, that's right. This is a video game club, and just plus listening, you are a member. We're going to talk about, this is a show that is not just about video games, though. It's about fashion. It's about interactive design, engineering, right? Genetics, bioluminescence. But today we're going to be zooming in on video games, folks. They have come a long way since Pac-Man. Have you seen these things?
I love them.
I was playing one of these the other day, and the characters were moving around all weird. And it turned out that they were actual other people, that I guess I had downloaded them from a website or something. But they shot me to death.
Oh no.
Have you guys seen this Y tennis? My nephew came to me and said, "Why tennis?" and handed me this thing. I said, "I don't know why tennis, because it's great for you and a lot of fun." But we played this thing, and the rackets are invisible in this one. And you're just swinging around the Y and knocking it back and forth. He's even got one where this little, it's a sword. And this this young lady runs around in her green hood and boots, and she runs around and...
cuts it.
Her name is Zelda. Yeah. I haven't seen... Yeah, well, she's in it, apparently, at some point. I did not see this. This is just this little green-clad figure. But when you wiggle around, it's a sword.
The sword goes, like the tennis racket does. Yeah, for sure.
What are we talking about this week?
We're talking about Skyward Sword. And
we're really just trying to not talk about it, aren't we?
Can I do the explain?
Yeah, go for it.
Yeah, I love that.
The Legend of Zelda Skyward Sword was a 2011 Wii motion-controlled entry in the Zelda franchise. It utilized the Wii Motion Plus peripheral, which was a box that you plugged into the bottom of the Wii remote to make it perform better.
I actually like the Wii Remote Plus, by the way. I think it made it a more attractive form factor and more pleasant to hold. I like the Wii Motion Plus.
Eventually, they would incorporate that technology into the core Wii remote so that you wouldn't need this, like, what was essentially a counterweight for your hilt of your Master Sword, essentially. But the entire game was designed around motion controls. The sword, you swung the Wii remote and your sword would swing either, you know, horizontally, vertically, diagonally. You could stab, you could aim your bow and arrow or your slingshot with the Wii Motion Plus. Virtually all of the game's sort of special tools and mechanics were built around these motion controls to varying degrees of success. That facet of it is sort of the make or break whether or not you're going to enjoy it. I really liked it. I did not think the motion controls were as bad as a lot of other people made them out to be. Particularly things like aiming the bow and arrow and firing off an arrow. Like, that felt really, really good for, you know, the time, 2011. Like, that was sort of new and exciting. In Skyward Sword HD, if you want to, you can pop off those Joy-Cons and play it with a you know, fairly accurate recreation of those motion controls. Weirdly, I think not as good. Or you can play now with a controller, and when you play with a controller, most of those motion controls are aped by the movement of the right stick. So if you're playing without motion controls, you swing the right stick, you flick the right stick right to swing your sword to the right, and vice versa, and you can probably fill out the rest from there. But it is important, if you've never played this game, to understand virtually every fight that you get into, you have to use the Master Sword in the correct way. Like, they will block every enemy has like a block they will do to a certain direction, and you have to swing against that direction to break their guard and do damage to them.
Griffo, let me stop you there. We're going to take a quick break and we'll come right back to talk more about Skyward Sword HD. Griffin, you were discussing the combat. Would you say that the one-to-one sword play not only works, it turns every fight into a dynamic puzzle requiring pattern recognition and swift, decisive movement? Would you say that fights against fellow swordsmen feel like proper duels more so than any motion-based game ever has before?
Oh my gosh.
Would you say that?
Are you reading my joystick review?
Your 2011 joystick review of Skyward Sword, yes. Am I holding you accountable for everything you say here to make sure it jives? Yeah. Has it? Yes, I am. Every word. So far, you're doing good.
Thank you. Yeah. I would say the combat is, okay, it's undeniably pretty neat to battle in this way. Every other Zelda game, even Breath of the Wild, there is not a whole lot of strategy to it, aside from, you know, you press the button that does the sword attack, and sometimes you do a jumping sword attack, and, you know, you can block and whatever. In Skyward Sword, you have, there's a lot of stuff you can do while you're fighting. There's a really great, like, shield bash counter maneuver that in some of the, like, tougher fights you have to execute. I would say that the combat is, like, where this game really, really shines. But it is, to like summarize my thoughts on it, it is a bending of the Zelda like formula to the point where it kind of breaks, and therefore like sort of Skyward Sword HD walks and trips down a flight of stairs so that Breath of the Wild could run is how I feel about it, because there's so many mechanics, there's so much stuff here that was new and fresh and like had never been in a Zelda game before, and I don't know, 10 years later I am not sure it is as successful as I first thought.
Yeah, okay, so here's the deal. We talked about Skyward Sword somewhat recently when we were ranking all the Zelda games, and yes, if people will recall, I shat on it pretty intensely. I really didn't love it when it came out. The things that I mentioned were like, the beginning is super slow. That's still true. And I didn't like the motion controls. I know Griffin felt strongly he liked them, but they never did it for me. They always felt kind of clumsy and annoying. And so in addition to the fact that you can use button controls for this, for swinging and stuff like that, the other major feature, and this seems ridiculous, is you can now skip through dialogue and skip every cutscene. And you know what? It kind of changed the entire game for me, because I was able to sprint through that really obnoxious, long-winded, you're in Skyloft talking to everyone and everyone's talking slowly and Fee shows up and talks to you slowly, and all that stuff can be kind of breezed through, because spoiler alert, the story in Zelda games is usually kind of not great for the most part. And you're able to get to the stuff that I think really, really works in this, which is, I think the dungeon designs are fantastic. I think the tools you're given are like really unique for a Zelda game. You know, the remote control beetle, you get this like bellowing wind, this thing that shoots wind out. Even the bombs, this was really the first game where the bombs had like actual physics to them, where you can like roll them.
Yeah, you can kind of bowl them or toss them, but they roll, and there's a lot of like, throw this bomb onto this ramp in a specific way, right, where it will roll down and blow up the crowd. Good bombs, this one.
Yeah, and that's all Breath of the Wild stuff, is like creative use of the environment using physics is like very new for a Zelda game, whereas previous Zelda games, all the physics was like canned physics. So right. I really do think, look, it's not my favorite Zelda game ever, but I do think the changes they've made here have made it a Zelda game that I'm actually eager to go and play, whereas before I was just like, nah, I'm literally never going to play this game again. And that's a pretty remarkable turnaround. I can't think of another game that's ever done that.
Yeah.
Get in there, Juice. Get nasty, Juice.
I know you feel strongly. Dousing sucks. I'll give you that. Dousing really sucks.
The whole thing, okay, this is such a weird thing. It's just, the whole thing is weird, because what you've done is you've taken out the absolute center of what this thing is, and you do miss it, because it's what the entire thing was designed around, was this motion control. And there are like weird kludgy solutions for everything, right? Like, but none of it feels right, because it wasn't, like, the fun of this thing was designed around, what if we could make sword fighting in a Zelda game fun with these Wii motion controls? And like, that was the core of the thing. And so like, it doesn't feel good. Like, all of it feels weird and bad. Like, and there's weird stuff, like to free look, you hold in the left shoulder button, which is just like the default for every game. So I've got like, my fucking arthritis is flaring up because I'm like, just want to be able to free look like I can in every modern video game on the planet.
It is worth noting,
like,
though,
free look constantly.
It is important to note, the original Skyward Sword had literally no free look. It wasn't even an option in the game. So you had to constantly drop into first person to like look around these rooms. So even though it is annoying to hold down a button, I kind of get it because you have to use that right stick for the Sora controls. I'd much rather it be in there than not. And it actually does make exploring these environments much more pleasurable to actually be able to look around.
But there's no reason that it couldn't, because they're what they've done is, right, so the right stick that you would use to look around is now mapped to the sword, right? So you can't. So you can't do that. But then at that point, I would be the person standing up in the meeting like, then we shouldn't make this. This we shouldn't do it. Let's port Mother 3 into English. Let's do anything else. We shouldn't do this because it feels bad. Like, and what else feels bad? Oh, it's so boring. walking through the forest is so stupid and boring. It's like a maze for no reason. And it's not a magical maze. It's just a forest that has like lots of different levels and stuff to like get lost on and get hung up on. They're like really, if you do a real, okay, okay.
Oh my.
There are so many segments in this game where you do like, you climb a thing and you swing on a vine and then you jump over another thing and then you climb across some vines. And when you get to the top, there's a big log, right? And you push the log down and then it's like, from now on, you can just jump up on the log.
Justin,
and I know that is not a completely unheard of video game mechanic, right? But it is this tacit admission in this game specifically of like, well, we know how not enjoyable that was, and you for sure never going to want to do it again as long as you live. So here's a log that you can jump on from now on, because that sucks.
Can I ask you an honest question? How far did you get in playing this? Because go ahead.
Yeah, I got in that first dungeon, you know what I mean? What's the boring one? Oh, I don't know, it's really boring, and you're just running around doing nothing. Oh, there's so many crystals you have to shoot with a slingshot. Thank you for bringing me into your fantasy world, by the way. Thanks for all the great fantasy gear. What's this, a slingshot? Oh man, that's so fun. Except, even that is robbed of the joy that it had when you played on the Wii, because then you could, like, you know, you're pretending to point a slingshot. Like, that makes sense, right?
I mean, there's a slingshot. As the first thing you would get. That doesn't have.
No. But I'm saying in this one, it would be fun, you know, if I had like a motion controller and I was like doing the thing that you do with the Wiimote. Like, it's built to be fun doing it way.
I would counter that. Okay. So, one of the first items you get is, and I mentioned this earlier, the remote control Beetle. And I remember playing this game on Wii, and even though I liked the idea of the Beetle, the idea that every time I shot the Beetle, I had to like motion control my way through its flight path fucking sucked. I always hated it. And the fact that I have it now and I just use an analog stick to control it, it feels great to me. I'd rather those smoother control processes than having to like constantly like, oh, I'm doing a first person like... with the slingshot as well. Like it's like cute for one time and then gets old to me. So I'd rather just play it like a straight Zelda game, which this feels, except for the sword fighting, feels like a straight Zelda game to me.
I'll give you a good, this is, I'm going to like let it go. Cause I'm sure obviously like just looking at the reviews, a lot of people enjoy this more than I did. They're these sculptulas, right? They're like giant skull spiders that hang down from the ceiling, and what you do is, if you attack them from the front, it doesn't hurt them, but they got this big glowy gem on their back or whatever, and their tummy, and if you hit them there, then they die. And you don't really, when you come across one, it's kind of like, if you hit it, it swings away and then swings back into you and hurts you. What you can eventually figure out is if you hit it with like a sideways slash, you can start it spinning, right? And then eventually the gem ends up in front of, like facing you, the tummy gem. And I struggled with this over and over and over again because it's like I would swing again once the tummy gem was facing me. I would swing and it would just start swinging the sculptula around again because I wasn't hitting the tummy. And what I finally like literally, and I'm sure it told me this one time in one of the dialogue things I skipped, but if you press the right thumbstick in, it will stab. Yeah. Like
what?
If I had had a motion controller 5 minutes ago, I would have like just tried to stab it, right? Because it would be intuitive and fun the way it was designed to be. This just feels like such a
retro fit. I mean, it seems like to me like you should have just played it with motion controls, to be honest.
Yeah.
Wait, what do you mean? Like, what? In what sense?
You can play with the motion controls
with the Joy-Con.
I have a Switch Lite. That's not. I actually can't do that.
Okay,
so
fair.
Take that, smart aleck.
Chris, what are your thoughts?
I have no major thoughts. I played a little bit of this and it kind of depressed me. And I didn't want to just dunk on a Zelda game that I know a lot of people love. And I knew that Justin was going to bring some heat and I knew that Fresh was going to bring some love. All I'll say about the motion controls is that motion controls.
Did you have fun? Like, can I just ask, just hot take, like, I don't know how much of you played. I don't really care, but like, was it fun?
No, but I didn't like it on Switch at all. So like, it just isn't for me.
On Wii, like, yeah, Russ, a lot of it, actually, it seems like right now.
Yeah. Anyway, all I wanted to say was the motion controls on Switch are, they're a mystery to me and a bummer because they don't have the precision of like playing on the Wii. Understandably, they don't have the same setup. So it, motion controls work, and they worked for the Wii when they work like 100% of the time. They didn't work on Kinect because they didn't work like, I don't know,
60% of the time.
No. Like being like super serious, I really think they like, even if they didn't work 1% of the time, that means 1 out of 100 times you try to use a button, it doesn't work. And if you think about how often you're tapping buttons, that's a lot. Like that's a whole lot. So I think that that is the issue that I've had with motion controls on Switch in general is, honestly, the fail rate is quite small. But when you're doing so many repetitive motions, you're going to hit that fail number time after time after time. And it's just, it just doesn't work as well as I'd hope. But that said, like I said, I'm glad that this game has a version that people can actually enjoy. Like, that seems pretty great. And it's been cool seeing a lot of people kind of give it a second shot. Like, this does feel like a game worthy of a second shot, unlike, say, that Choo Choo Train Zelda game. You know, like,
I think it's called Zelda's Magic Choo Choo was the name of that one. It's weird having a Zelda game that I remember not a stitch of. Like, I don't remember anything about this game, which is wild because I did review it 10 years ago. It's for me. I we've only been talking about the controls, which is doing the game something of a disservice. There are some great parts of this game. There are some genuinely redeeming parts of this game. For me, the issue is not the controls because I've been playing it. I just cleared the third temple or so. Like, I feel pretty accustomed to them. It is the amount of filler that is present in the game. And Justin touched on some of this because you hit it instantly. As soon as you get to that, the setup for the first temple, like you have to douse where you switch into first person mode and you aim your sword around and look for, I think, 3 Koroks that are hiding all around this forest. And you do that and it's like, well, that wasn't exactly fun, but now I'm ready to go into this temple. Okay. And then you get to the second area, and it's like, okay, now you need to find 5 pieces of the key by dousing.
Yeah.
And then you can go in the temple. And it's like, okay, this isn't fun, but I am excited to get to that next temple. And then you get to the third area, and it's like, okay, now you need to douse to find these 3 generators. And it's like, holy shit. Like, I if memory serves, it doesn't get much better. Like, you go back to the same 4 areas to and things change in those areas because of like world events and new tools that you get, but the I don't know, the stuff between the temples has been a real drag. And I hit a wall where I just kind of put the game down for a couple days before the third temple because I was just so tired of dousing for shit. And to me, that is the issue, is that it is, I don't know, there's so much filler, and it genuinely doesn't need it, because this game's huge. It's like a 50-hour long Zelda game, which is too long for a Zelda game that isn't Breath of the Wild.
There's also, can I say you fly a bird in this, and it sucks so bad, like flying the bird.
It's very slow. It doesn't.
It's so slow and rotten. And if you go up, if you want to go, there's things above you sometimes. If you want to go up to them, you can't go up to them too fast or you'll just stop. Because bird air flight physics, you know how when you're riding a giant bird in real life, when you're flying up too fast and having too much fun, it stops completely. That's definitely represented here. The only good thing about it is that you can jump off to ride your bird, you jump off your floating home, and that's kind of fun when you are flying through the air and you call for your bird, and you can you jump onto the back of your bird. That's kind of I would say that's kind
of fun. I'm going to put a pin in this by saying it's important that people remember, even though I actually think this game, and you guys haven't really gotten there, but this game has some of the better dungeons that Zelda has ever done. Dungeon 3, for example, is like this very cool time warping, like jumps in the future, jumps in the past stuff. But
this is also the one with a pirate ship dungeon that, if memory serves, that like beats ass.
Yeah, the dungeons I think are actually exceptionally good for a Zelda game. But that said,
not the best boss fights. Some shitty boss fights here and there.
That
the boss
said,
fight in the third dungeon is not.
It
great.
Is okay, still yes. The third best Zelda game on Switch. So you've got obviously Breath of the Wild. You've got the remake of Link's Awakening, which is also really good. And then you've got this. So the fact of the matter is, if
you
not,
you can play Link to the Past
on the SNES.
Yeah,
you can play sure. Link to the
so
Past.
Fine,
on
four,
SNES,
so the fourth.
Fourth best.
And then the original Zelda, if you want to include that. So fifth.
Fifth best.
This is fifth better best. Than the original Zelda.
Probably, yeah.
So, look, it is not by any means my favorite Zelda game, but I do think, even though I completely agree, it has a slow start and some filler in it, the parts that are good are very good and worth experiencing if you are a Zelda fan. And this is coming from someone who genuinely hated playing the first one. So really keep that in mind, that it is quite a turnaround. So, I don't know, consider it.
I think you could say that as the flagship component of Zelda franchise's 25th anniversary, you couldn't ask for a better identikit of the series. As it moves through the all-too-familiar cycle of temples, tools, and time
Justin,
crafting.
Justin,
could you say that somewhere within Skyward Sword slumbers the best Zelda game of all time? It is choked by a dozen hours of needless cruft, but... it's there.
It's right. I'm fucking right. I was right then, and I'm right now.
Griffin, a question for you. Which band did you reference with your deck on this review?
Ooh.
Ooh, wow.
Oh, my
God.
Think
about it. It's 2011. Where is a young Griffin's mind 10 years ago?
Think of it. Put yourself in 2011. You're reviewing Skyward Sword. Is your deck?
You might be listening to a certain soundtrack.
It's three words.
Oh, God. A certain soundtrack?
Let me just say the song's going to change your life.
Oh, no. Was it fucking Such Great Heights?
Indeed. Indeed it was.
Oh, man.
Fuck, that's good. All right. Hey, we're gonna take another break and be right back to talk about the Steam Deck and how it will change the entire planet. But first, commercialism. Well, this is a surprise, huh? This one kind of came out of it both came out of nowhere, but then also sort of like I feel like vibes of this thing have been sort of like bouncing around.
What are you talking about?
The Steam Deck. The new incredible private computer that you carry around in your pocket if you have JNCOs.
It's Gabe's private computer. We know the problem with computers is sometimes the screen's too big, and if you're looking at yucky stuff on there, people see it. So we've made the Steam Deck, a private computer that fits in your hand.
Yeah, you can. This one, you can leave your passwords right in it because it is a private computer. This is like your library computer, folks. This is the one you can put your passwords right into.
Russ, set this up.
Okay, so this has been rumored for a while. I remember there was Gabe gave a speech where he's talking about like how they wanted to produce a handheld gaming PC effectively. And, you know, knowing Valve, he says a lot of things. So there's really no telling what they're going to actually do versus not. But they actually went ahead and did this. It is as people mentioned, a handheld gaming PC fully integrated with Steam. So the idea is that you can run any games that you already own on Steam on this handheld gaming PC, assuming that they're not like extremely, extremely, you know, 3D intensive, amazing games, because it you know, hardware wise, it's not like, you know, it's not like having a 380 graphics card in there, but it
just
uses
a caveat. It is running Linux.
Right. I was going to say that
sort of standard. So there's some games that have been confirmed that they
there's caveat a to the caveat. it's running a version of Linux that apparently will translate Windows.
Some of them, yeah.
Is what they're talking about, which, I mean, yeah.
I've talked to some people, some developers, about like how feasible that is, and it sounds like it is doable, but I wouldn't expect like newer PC games to really be able to come out on Steam Deck as well, because, you know, it's not a perfect translation of getting Linux games to work on whatever. But I would say where it's really cool is, for at least for me, where I look at it as like a really cool device, is just as an indie platform. I mean, you know, these last 3-4 years that the Switch has been around, whenever there's an opportunity to get a game on an indie game and it's multi-platform, I usually opt for Switch just because of the portability of it.
Right.
This might change that decision for me, because I'll have, you know, a higher end device, a Switch Pro, if you will, that will handle all that stuff while also having like all my library of games. This thing can also be like booted up with any OS you want, because there's an SD card. You could just flash an SD card with any OS. And so that'll open up the gates for stuff like emulators, stuff like you'll be able to do remote play on, you know, from PS5 and whatever. So it kind of becomes an all-in-one. Obviously, the only thing you'd be missing then is the first-party Nintendo games that you get on a Switch. But other than that, I think it really is a very interesting product for people that play predominantly handheld, which I certainly do.
Great price point, too, for what it is.
Yeah, remind people, that what is it, 400?
So they came out
point?
With three tiers. Yep. The lowest tier has 64 gigs of internal eMMC internal storage, and that's $400. But then the next two versions have the NVMe SSDs, which are a lot faster. Mm-hmm. So if loading times are like a thing for you, one is 256 gigs, that's $529. And then one is 512 gigs, which is $649. Which, like, you know, that's pricey when compared to a Switch.
Yeah.
But when compared to a gaming PC, like these are quite affordable, and specs wise, like these are about on par with like Xbox One. Like,
yeah, that's a
thereabouts.
Good way to think of it. The interesting thing is that there have been handheld gaming PCs before. Like, there are a number of them. You can find them on Amazon by a number of different makers. But they're all, like, very scattered and kind of, you know, they've all got giant keyboards on them. And there's not really been a unifying device that will, like, be like, oh, this is the go-to handheld PC. And I do think, assuming they can manufacture enough of these, this has the potential to be that, like, this is becomes like the standard for handheld gaming PCs. And I think that'll be really cool.
The one thing that kind of surprised, like that jumped out at me a little bit is this thing's fucking heavy.
Yeah.
It's real heavy to a point where it's going to be like, I don't know about like long-term portable
how heavy is it?
Oh, it's a pound and a half.
For comparison, I saw a video that compared it to like a little heavier than a Nintendo Switch with a PSP taped onto it.
Yeah, it's heavier. It is 1.5 Wii U's. Like, remember the Wii U gamepad with the screen in it? If you want the, it's like 50% heavier than that. It's a pound and a half. Like, it is.
I'm diesel though. Like, I'm ripped. Like,
yeah.
No, I know you're ripped, but I feel like some. This is just like begging, and this is my age coming through. But like, it begging for carpal tunnel. It is 50% heavier than the heaviest portable ever made. Like, nothing else ever made even comes like. Can you guys think of any? And I can, like, I don't have like a list of all the weights. I just looked at everything in like the Nintendo family. Can you think of like any portable that
Game
might
Gear
be?
With all its batteries probably pretty damn heavy?
Yeah, there's some heavy ass batteries. Virtual Boy, the way I played it.
Okay, shout out Russ. Shout out Game Gear with all its batteries. 2 pounds.
Yeah, buddy. Wow.
So you are right. You are right about that.
I just,
that hit console that everybody loved and bought, the Game Gear. Now plug a TV tuner into that son of a bitch.
I was 8 years old when I played that game. I played Echo on that thing. If my 8-year-old little bird arms could handle it, I'm sure I could handle this.
Yeah. There's also going to be like a dock that comes with it that you can run into a TV. Like, it is so funny to me that this really did come out around the same time that the Switch Pro was not announced.
This is what they were thinking.
Yeah, it really is. It is also the fact that the Steam Deck was announced on the same day that Elgato announced their Stream Deck is proof of a benevolent God that loves us all and wants us all to be so happy that he just gives us little treasures like that. What do you think that was like at Elgato when they were like, yeah, shit, what did they do? They announced our Stream Deck? No, it's a different thing.
The thing that I am very excited about this piece of hardware, I think that it is, I think it's extremely cool. My concern with it is I worry that this, and I mean, this is not enough to keep me from pre-ordering one. I did pre-order one, but in terms of like long-term viability, I worry about this walking the line between like being a PC and all the like flexibility that offers, but also being a console and the sort of like promise of stability and reliability that entails.
Right.
Like I worry that they hove too far, because I don't want to have to be fooling with a lot of the junk that you don't have to mess with on a typical console in terms of like, updates and patching and the ability to like, you know, different mods and stuff like that. Like I want it to be fairly... I don't want a closed garden, but I want it closed enough where I don't have to
fuck with it. Yeah, I get that. I think for people that are looking for that like kind of quote safe garden, I think people will just use the Steam functionality. Anything on Steam more or less is going to work fine, and you'll know certainly because the hardware is standardized. There will be reviews that be like, oh, this runs really great on a Steam Deck, for example. For people that want something more versatile, you have that option to like go online and find a like weird OS that you can flash onto the device to turn it into whatever the hell you want. And that's
that I think, weird OS, Windows.
I mean, yeah, I mean, I guess you could throw Windows on it, sure.
In theory. I mean, I what I'm excited about is the competition, right? Like, I don't even know if they expect this to be a thing that lasts for the next 5 to 10 years and that they're just in the hardware business. I think for them, they just want more people making portable video game machines like this that allows you to access the Steam Store, right?
That's
their big investment. Yeah. So I have to imagine that we'll see companies like Razer getting into this market that have a lot more experience making this sort of hardware. I hope that this finally forces the hand on Microsoft to like think about what does a portable gaming focused, you know, handheld look like. You know, they want Game Pass to be anywhere and everywhere, but like that doesn't work super well when the best ways to play games portably are Switch and, you know, the Steam Deck, and neither allow you to access Game Pass.
I would really like to see a version of this, and I don't know if we'll ever get it, but like a version of this that is built specifically with PlayStation Remote Play in mind. I mean, there's like solutions for that, but nothing that feels like 100%. Like even the using the backbone, right, is a nice solution, but I have to take my case off to use the backbone. And, you know, it's still my phone, so like I can't do like phone shit with it while I've got the controller.
I would be very surprised if Sony does not support this very close to launch. Consider that Sony supports iOS remote play, Windows remote play, Mac remote, like every platform is effectively supported. There's no downside for them to support it on this, and I know Valve would be eager for it. So
yeah, they're not trying to push Vita sales.
Right.
Worth noting, we didn't talk about this, the Steam Deck incorporates some of that Steam Link controller shit where they can simulate a mouse with two individual trackpads and mouse buttons on the back, or like programmable buttons on the back of the thing.
Yeah,
which, if you ever use Steam, it worked really well actually for Steam Link. So like even games that aren't controller based, you'll still be able to play. I don't know. I'm stoked. I think it's going to be awesome. Pre-ordering it was a fucking nightmare, but
oh god. In a very predictable way, you know what I mean? Like I even think I tricked myself right before, like, this is Valve, man. Maybe they've got it all figured out here, and instantly the whole thing is crapping the bed. I had a genuine like bottom pit of my stomach fear for almost the entire day that what if I had bought 10 of these? Like, I clicked enough things that Valve, I think, could legally send me 10
yeah.
and be like, well, I don't know, stupid.
It's your fault now.
That'll be $6,000, please.
Hey, we got any questions from the audience?
Yeah, I'll toss to them. The first one is a little long and the rest are shorter. This one's from the smallest possible E. Nintendo has a frustrating track record of not including accessibility options in their games. Remaking a motion control game led to some awkward results, like holding L for camera, and didn't leave them room to provide control remapping, even if they had tried. With intentional accessibility design in AAA games becoming more common, do you think we will see control remapping or any access options in Breath of the Wild 2? Or will Nintendo games stay at you get what you get with little to no customization?
Yeah, that's interesting. I never thought about that, but it is true that, like, I really can't think of any Nintendo games that allow control remapping. I feel like there might have been a Metroid, maybe. But generally speaking, they don't support it.
Jump and run in Breath of the Wild 1, but not in the way that you would want to.
Oh, right. Very limiting. Very limiting. Yeah, I would love to, but the point is well taken that they have always been really reticent to do that, and it doesn't make a lot of sense to me. I know they feel like they're crafting the perfect version, but obviously not everyone plays the same way, so I would love to see it.
I wouldn't haul out too much hope.
Yeah, probably not.
It's Nintendo. If you want things from them, they won't give them to you. Let's remember, Nintendo, we won't give you what you want, but you want what we give you. And just to add a codicil in this case, but you may not be able to play it because we did not think about you. I'm sorry.
The next question,
Nintendo.
The next question is from Noah. Who is your favorite character in the franchise and why is it Groose?
No.
God.
No. It ain't Groose. It's the guy who runs the cannonball minigame in Wind Waker. The one who you play Battleship. Y'all know who I'm talking about? He's the one who, like, runs the minigame in that first town you get to and tries to simulate the sounds of ocean combat with his mouth. And so he does a lot of sploosh. That dude's the fucking best.
Yeah, I know I said story tends to be pretty weak in Zelda, but Wind Waker's story and writing is really exemplary.
Yeah.
Guys, it's 100% David Jr. Obviously David Jr. because his name's David Jr.
Who?
Who is David?
Well, David Jr. is at the top of Tingle Tower, and he works with, he's one of the Tingle siblings.
Oh, sure.
And his name's David Jr. You guys don't fuck with David Jr.? He's in Wind Waker and Four Swords Adventures and the Minish Cap. I just looked up his Zelda wiki page. His name's David Jr. I don't even know if there's a David Sr.
That might be
Tingle. Hey, Fresh, what else have you been playing this week?
Clap Hand. Okay, it goes without saying that playing games and baby don't always mix, but I think Clap Hand's Golf. I listened to your episode of Mario Golf, and I've listened to that episode where you guys were talking about the best games of the first half of the year. Seriously, Clap Hand's Golf is really spectacular, and I continue to play it on iPhone, and I started playing with the Backbone, which I initially didn't love, but it totally clicked for me. That game fucking rocks, and it's great to be able to just, like, do a hole or two and stop and have it save your progress, and it's terrific.
Did you say you play it with Backbone?
I started playing it with the Backbone, yes.
How does the swinging work?
It's with the right analog stick. It's kind of like how those Tiger Woods games used to work, where you pull it back and then push it forward.
Yeah.
It works great. Love it.
Justin, I sent you a link to the Canon game from Wind Waker. Can you play a little bit of that for everybody?
Splish, splish, splish. You get
it. Great.
Love it. It's pretty good. It's pretty good. Very good. I need to put that sound on a button, actually, now that I think about it. I need to have it on my soundboard.
When you hit something, he goes, kaboom! It's fantastic.
Okay, so, have I been playing anything? You guys, what else? You guys, Beat Saber Custom. Griffin, what's that?
Oh.
And that's Beat Saber.
Yeah, I was getting into Beat Saber, but I didn't really like any of the songs that were in it, so I just got on SideQuest, which is a platform you can use to sideload content onto your quest. And through a very convoluted workaround, you can download your own songs into the game. And so I've been doing that, and it's dope. There's a lot of songs from my jam now is the Celeste soundtrack is on there almost in its entirety. And the finale of that soundtrack, Reach for the Summit, is like 11 minutes long. Boy, howdy, that is a gauntlet, but it is exhilarating to get through that. Confronting myself too, the one that song that plays when you're sort of having the climactic battle at the end of Celeste is on there too. It's fantastic. There's also, I've been playing a little bit of Township Tale, which I mentioned earlier. It's like a, I don't know, pseudo life sim game for VR that I was pretty pumped about. Like, you have to use an axe to cut down trees and then put that in a woodworking shop to chisel out a handle and then collect ore that you have to smelt down into a sword. It's like very, trying to be accurate crafting game, basically. But it's, I don't think it's quite ready for prime time yet. So I don't want to go too deep in it.
Have not been playing a lot other than this game because I am just like wild about it. The one thing that I did, and it is called Progress to 100. This is like such an old game. Like, it's an extremely old game.
You've talked about it on this show before, I feel like.
I mean, that's possible because it came out in 2015. But like, my daughter was wanting to play these, like, there's a lot of these like bad lateral thinking puzzle games on iOS that people like stream a lot on YouTube, whatever, you know, it's like, make a path for the guy to do the thing. Progress to 100 is a game where there are like 100 individual stages that each one tasks you with like doing a different, really interesting thing with the iPhone. And it's from this phase of iPhone development where like people were seeming to like really come up with unique things to do with it rather than just treating like a small bad computer that didn't have a mouse or a keyboard or a game controller. You know what I mean? Like, they were really leaning into it. Like, you, I think of like this and like the Simogo games, along the same lines. But like, just to give you an example of this one, there's one where it's like the screen just says like quiet down or something, and you hear the sounds of a movie and your phone ringing and someone shushing you, and it's like, okay, what do you want me to do here? And it turns out what you need to do is like lower the volume on your phone, like physically like lower the volume, and that's how you pass the stage. And there's like, yeah, there's like a lot of, there's 100 different ones like that. And it's good for a kid. Like, you can, it's very simple for them to sort of figure it out, but I've been having fun with that.
And last up, I've been playing some Clap Hands Golf, and I've also been watching the films of Brian De Palma, despite someone crossing it out on our list of things to talk about.
Who would do that?
I'm guessing Russ Frushdick. But y'all, if you like trashy video games, see, there's a connection. You should check out the films of Brian De Palma streaming on Criterion Channel, specifically Blowout and Body Double. I think you're going to really enjoy them. Anyway, here's the things that we talked about this week, because this is a new thing that we do that people seem to like. We talked about The Legend of Zelda Skyward Sword, a divisive Zelda game now available on your Nintendo Switch. We talked about Clap Hands Golf. More. It's a golf game. You can play it on iOS.
Great.
We talked about Beat Saber Custom, which, go exercise in VR. We also talked about Township Tale, a life simulation that is not ready for prime time. We talked about Progress to 100 for the umpteenth time. And we talked about Body Double, which is a great film by Brian De Palma. Next week, we're going to talk about Death's Door, which is kind of like Zelda meets, Dark Souls meets The Crow. Not the movie, an actual crow. And that's it.
Have you ever read The Devil's Candy? It's a book about the making of Bonfire of the Vanities.
No, I've been listening
you
to
would love it. It is absolutely,
I feel like I'm in fucking school right now. Like, that's how bored I am. Like, I
the
feel like
the
Palma
is the anti-school. It's the
next
fun
week movie. We're going to talk about Death's Door. So Death's Door is what we're going to be talking about. And that's going to do it for this week on The Besties. So be sure to join us again next time for The Besties. Because shouldn't the world's best friends be like the world's best games? besties.